Good morning. It is time to skip the BS. Time for Undisputed. Man, time to talk about another extremely intriguing night in the NBA. We will get to LeBron's minutes issue and Jalen Green's superstar potential and the Suns' fourth quarter woes and the Sixers' chances with Embiid returning soon. We'll get to all that very soon, and Rachel Nichols will join us in just a few minutes. But first up, good morning to Keyshawn Johnson.
Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm good.
All right. So Keyshawn and I are about to discuss Keyshawn's friend. Can I call him a friend of yours, Draymond Green?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. He was at it again last night in Orlando, as you probably know by now. Draymond got ejected for a career-high fourth time this season, a little more than 3 minutes into that game, after he got into it with referee Ray Acosta and would not back off. Tech, tech, gone. Clearly, Steph Curry was not happy about Draymond getting himself tossed, considering Jonathan Kuminga already was out on this back-to-back. They had been in Miami, of course, the night before. So late in the game, after Steph hit a big three to seal it at Orlando, as he left the game, he kicked three chairs in frustration. This is what Steph had to say after the game.
We need him. He knows that. We all know that. So whatever it takes to keep him on the floor, and be available, that's what's got to happen. Especially at this point in the year. So tough way to start the game, but I am extremely proud of every single person that stepped foot on the floor tonight and responded the way that they did. We know how important the season is, or this part of the season is, and our ability to get into a rhythm and secure a play-in opportunity and give ourselves a shot. We don't want to have self-inflicted wounds when it comes to that. And we all care. We all are passionate about the game and our chances to have something to play for down the stretch. So you give everything you got to this game, and that's the emotion.
Ooh. Okay, Keyshawn, how close to you is Draymond to being more trouble than he's worth?
I mean, we could certainly evaluate that at the end of the year.
Yep.
If I'm with the Warriors, I'm going to take a look at it at the end of the year, because we're not winning championships right now, right? We just not. And so when you look at what Steph is saying there, you want to give your team the best chance to win. And if he's not on the floor, you're not giving your team the best chance to win. It's about trying to get him at times to understand how to control his emotions, because he's a target. He has a big target on his back. If he sneezes in the direction of a referee, they're going to throw him out. It's just, but he brought a lot of that up on himself.
He did.
That's just the reality of it. And you have to know that when you play with him, play against him, as his teammate, as his coach, they know this is problematic. Now, when we get out of the season, if we're not bringing Clay back and we're moving on from whoever else, we might take a hard look at moving on from Draymond, because it's at the end of the line right now for him anyway.
Yep.
He's still a good basketball player, but we most likely, as an organization, going in another direction at the end of the season, we're going to hit the reset button anyway. Because right now, we're sitting at 10. Could be 11 and be at home in a couple weeks and not even be in the play-in. So it's one of those deals you got to address at the end of the season. And, you know, he is what he is. I don't want the edge taken away from him, but what I want him to do is dial it back and understand you are literally hurting us.
Yeah.
If Steph Curry doesn't go bananas, so to speak, they lose. If that's against the Nuggets, they lose. If that's against Boston, they lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, teams that are much better than the Magic.
Yeah. They were very fortunate they were playing the Magic last
night. Exactly.
They were as fortunate the night before that Jimmy Butler did not play for the Miami Heat in Miami. And to Golden State's credit, to Steph's credit, they won both of those games, as Houston is breathing and breathing and breathing right down their necks.
Yeah.
So I'll be the first to admit, I get tired of talking about Draymond because this just keeps happening again and again and again. And I'm going to give you this up front. I'm going to preface everything I'm about to say with the fact you know him. And everybody I know who knows him really, really likes him because I think away from basketball, he's a great guy. He's fun to be around. He's a barrel of laughs. He has a big personality. Is that all true with the times you've been to dinner with him? Is he fun to be with?
He's just a normal guy.
He's just a normal guy, a fun guy, a smart guy, a clever guy, a witty guy. He's got a TV future already in his back pocket because he's already under contract to work for TNT. He is a celebrity podcaster. He's a big deal to the NBA. He's a drawing card for the NBA because I think people do tune in to watch Draymond for better or for worse. He's part of that show. Obviously, it's Steph's show in the end, but he's a big part of that show. And the commissioner bent over backward, tried to do everything in his power to get Draymond right for the sake of the league as a drawing card to get him back in business. And he was gone for, 16 games? Yeah, 16 games. So he's gone for about a month. This is December 14th to January 15th.
Well, that's because he put his hands on somebody. Right,
he put lots
situation.
Of hands on lots of people.
Yeah.
He choked and pulled Rudy Gobert, and then he did some spinning MMA kick on Nurkic in the corner. I don't even know what that was. But the point is, Draymond has had a long, long history of cheap shots in this league.
Yeah.
You can make a case that he is the dirtiest player who ever played in the NBA, but he's a lovable, likable villain. He's a beloved villain off the floor, so it sort of mitigates his circumstances. It sort of eases the blows when you try to evaluate, well, who exactly is Draymond? Because everybody wants to like Draymond. He's not the classic villain where everybody despises Draymond because I don't think anybody really despises him. I don't even get the sense that players on other teams despise him after I can show you like reams of tape of cheap shot after cheap shot where you say, where did that come from? Literal low blows on LeBron, obviously, in the NBA Finals. We can go on and on. Literal low blows on Steven Adams, kicks in the groin. We could go on and on and on. But supposedly he underwent some sort of anger management training, usually when it's only a month. It's not going to really stick or take hold. So, as you say, you don't want him to lose his edge. Steve Kerr has been upfront and out front about that. Steph has talked about it. We still want Draymond to be Draymond. Well, that's a slippery slope you're on because the edge is still uncontrolled. It's not calculated edge. It's not in control edge. It just goes over the edge, right? The edge goes over the edge. Did it not again last night?
It did. I mean, I don't know. Referees, you know, trying to explain something to a referee, first of all, he touched the ref to try to get his attention.
You just
probably
can't.
Shouldn't have done that.
He touched him nicely.
He just was like, look. Yeah. But then I don't know the words that's coming out of his mouth because I can't read lips and I can't hear what he's saying. It just usually there's some curse words that come with that, and that becomes a disrespect to the referee. So at that point, they're going to toss you. But having a conversation to explain to the referee what your issue is, I don't have any problems with that. It's if you start cursing at him and touching him, now you put yourself in a position to be thrown out of game. Now you put yourself in a position to be thrown out.
All right. So he had been called for his first personal foul a little before. Remember, we're only 3 minutes and change
in.
Yeah. And now he's upset with the call on Steph. Now, this is at Orlando, a team you should be able to beat at full strength. You don't have Kuminga, but with Draymond and Clay and Steph, you should be able to beat them.
Yes.
And now he's upset about a call on Steph. And he goes at Ray Acosta and gets attacked. Well, this is at the point where you just say, okay, that's enough. And somebody has to. Steph tried to play peacemaker a little bit and get in between him a little bit, but he would not back off. And Keyshawn, at a point, I started to wonder, do you want to get thrown out? Are you trying to, like, inspire your team by getting thrown out? Because you want to talk about double-edged sword, it's going to be hard to win without you.
Yeah.
And that's why Steph said, you just heard him talk. He said, I am extremely proud of every player who stepped on the floor for us tonight because, Keyshawn, that was a gutsy win for them.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And by the way, in the fourth quarter, Andrew Wiggins, I don't know if you noticed this, but he scored 13 in the fourth on 5 of 8 shots and made 2 threes. So that was huge. Steph only had 5 in the fourth, but hit the one big, it was kind of the dagger shot. So they actually won at Miami, and they actually won at Orlando against some odds, because I'm going to remind everybody, there was a play, and I didn't take it too seriously. In fact, I didn't even bring it up yesterday in the show. We didn't even put it in the rundown.
With the headlock?
Yeah. No, there's a little throwdown, pull down on Patty Mills. My old friend, Patty Mills.
I mean, he kind of got tangled up with him, it looked like to me.
I thought they were both a little bit at fault. And I also thought Patty flopped just a touch.
He kind of got tangled up with him.
Yeah, I don't know.
He got kind of tangled up with him.
He got a little tangled up. But maybe I'm so numb to Draymond, maybe I think, oh, well, that's just sort of typical Draymond, right?
But you're thinking like the referee now.
Yeah.
That's what the ref, that's what they see.
Okay, but maybe they gave him a break on that because they went and looked at it and they just called it a common foul.
Yeah, because
foul.
It looked like he was trying to get around him with his arm. You know, he got big arms compared to Patty Mills, and he's trying to get around him. And at the same time, he's, you know, now if he'd have clutched on him, now you're talking about something different.
Like Gobert and dragged.
Exactly. You're talking about something different. But I don't, you know, look, first of all, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not any of those
things. Maybe you should be.
But what I would say, from my observation now and in the past about Draymond on the court, altercations happen and it's almost like he can't stop.
Can't stop.
Like he doesn't like to be told what to do. He just can't stop. We all get into arguments with people, whether you're at home or wherever, and you got to know when to just, you know what, man, you won. Never, I don't have time to argue.
Maybe not you won, but that's enough.
But that's enough. Okay.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have time to be arguing with you. And he needs to figure out how to do that. How to just say, you know what, I said what I needed to say, and I'm going to walk away so that I don't get tossed. But he can't seem to do that, though. He just can't.
Which means Golden State, as usual, is damned if they do and damned if they don't. Listen, you can make a strong case they would not have won those championships without Draymond because they were a finesse team, a quote-unquote soft team.
But we all understand, Skip, what he brings to the table.
He brings.
Four years ago, they won a championship, right? Was it 3 or 4 years ago?
Which one?
The
Boston
one.
Championship? It was
three seasons ago?
Well, it's 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, two seasons ago.
Yeah.
They won a championship.
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody really saw them winning a championship. Then they got rolling and it was over with. Is that going to happen again in 2025, in 2026? Probably not.
Probably not.
So at some point, as a front office executive and a head coach and the people that make the decisions, they've got to sit back there and say, you know what? Let's cut bait now and rebuild this thing. I understand that he was part of the foundation of what we've been able to accomplish here, but that's okay. You can move on from those guys. Legendary players, people move on from them all the time.
They do.
Especially when you get into these situations where the body of work that you're displaying out on the court or the field isn't worth it anymore.
No, that's the point.
It's a lot. It's a lot of caring and holding hands, so to speak.
All right, so a year ago, it started off with, unfortunately, we all got to see it, Draymond punching Jordan Poole.
Oh.
And I still don't know who leaked the tape of that, the videotape, but somebody inside let that go.
Somebody inside, the videographer did it.
I guess so.
Somebody in that space heard who it was.
Somebody did.
In that space.
And somebody wanted Draymond's reputation stained, and it stained his reputation because we actually got to see the video of the punch thrown during a practice. And it was pretty ugly. I don't know what Jordan Poole said to precipitate that, but I'm sure that was pretty ugly also. But
the point was somebody
had to go, and Jordan Poole ended up going.
Well, he didn't play well that year.
But the point was, what was the culmination of last year? Well, your Los Angeles Lakers got to play them in the second round, and I say got to play them is the operative word.
Was it 4-1?
They won 2, but it didn't even feel like
4-2.
It. And you know what? Draymond wasn't very good. None of them were very good. The Lakers won that handily.
Yeah.
I thought they won it decisively. It just felt like they were clearly the better team.
Absolutely.
So now it's what have you done for me lately? Well, not much. So now they have struggled to the point this year. They're a sub 500 team at home. They're actually a better road team than they are a home team. They are below 500 at home. That team is below 500. That's just wrong. And that is the main reason the Houston Rockets are right on top of them. And the Rockets won again last night. That's 12 of 13 they've won. They've won 10 straight. Jalen Green, we're going to talk about him in a few minutes, is emerging as a potential superstar in this league. The Rockets are everything right now that the Warriors are not. The Rockets are going straight north, and the Warriors are sort of teetering along and starting to drift south a little bit.
Look, if they make it to the play-in and they make it to the playoffs, how far do you honestly think that the Warriors will go?
Nowhere.
And they may not get out of the first round, or they may get out of the first round. But at the end of the year, I could almost promise you without knowing, they're going to evaluate the Draymond Green situation.
Yeah.
They just are. You have to.
Well, you just have to because his numbers are in decline.
Yeah.
And he's never been much of a shooter. So what does he do? He's kind of their enforcer. Yeah, you and I both know. It's not like he's an old school tough guy. It's not like he's a fighter. It's not like other teams are afraid that he's going to deck somebody because that's not who he is.
No, he's just aggressive under the
court. He's just aggressive.
On the court.
And he knows all the little tactics, sort of the gray area tactics. And he does give them a physicality at about 6'7". He's an undersized. Sometimes he plays the five for them. Because Looney, I still don't know what's wrong with Looney. He's in the doghouse. So they don't have much rim protection without him. So they need him badly. Kuminga has emerged to some degree. But last night they needed Draymond, which is why Steph went over and kicked the chairs. Well, Keyshawn, how many times do you think ownership or management has gone to Steph Curry and say, it's your call. Do you want him gone or not? How many times has Steph said, I don't want him gone?
I would think that they have communicated that to some point about what it is that they want to do with Draymond, with Steph. You should.
Yeah. And I'm sure at every juncture, at every cross in the road, Steph has said, no, he's our guy.
Yeah.
We've won with him, and we can win with him again.
But they got to take this at some point, though. They're going to have to take it out of Steph's hands.
They are.
They got to take it out of his hands and make a decision based on the best thing for the franchise.
I got it. And I thought it was significant. Draymond was waiting for Steph up in the tunnel after the game, and they hugged it out.
Yeah.
But Draymond did not speak to the media after the game. He went home and tweeted about what a big win it was. But the point is, this thing, especially, Keyshawn, there's a real shot they're not going to make the playoffs. There's a real shot.
Or the play-in.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Make the play-in to may even have a shot to get to the playoffs.
They're tied right now, right? With Houston?
No.
They're still a half game up?
I think they're a game. Are they a game up?
Either a game or a half game up.
I think they're one game up right now because they've won two in a row.
And they still have to play Houston, too.
They have to play Houston.
So they're one up, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a game up, and I just don't like their chances. And it just feels like he's on the edge again of going over the edge and out of control, and I just don't
see, I don't think, Skip, the physicality part of it, putting his hands on players and doing some of the shenanigans, I think that's over with. I think that part of it is probably over with unless somebody gets into an altercation with him. I honestly believe that. But as far as this, I don't know, screaming at the refs or players or whatever, he's going to still do that. But I think the stepping on chests of players and doing some of those things like he did Sabonis, I think that might be over with.
Do you?
I do. I honestly think that got
counseled out of him, you think?
I think so. I think they had a real deep conversation with him to let him know, your ass is going to be kicked out of the league.
Yeah. I'm sure the commissioner drove home that
with
point.
Opposed to getting thrown out. You said it was a league. I mean, it was a career high on
four. Career high four.
Ejections. Ejections?
Yeah.
That's it? I would have thought he had, like,
I know, but four in a year is a lot for him. I'm not talking about just technical fouls.
He gets a lot of technicals. But for some reason, I felt like he had 10 or something.
Okay, here's another one for you. This was the second time he was ejected in the first quarter this season. And this is according to ESPN stats and information. He's the only player with multiple first quarter ejections in a season over the last 20 years. So that's really rare.
Game just started.
Yeah, the game just started and you're gone and you're gone. So that's happened twice this year. Okay, that's where at some point Steph's going to sit back and say, you know what? That's enough of that. Because you can't trust him because you can't count on him to even stay eligible to play past the first quarter.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, Skip, but I want him to keep his edge. Just don't put your hands on nobody. I don't want to change him.
Yeah.
Because that's who he is. If you try to change him, first of all, it's too late in his career to try to change him. But you can have him dial back some of the behavioral stuff. But they're going to certainly visit this at the end of the season. I could almost promise you they are.
Well, it's starting to feel like the end of the season is going to come sooner than later.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right.
When it comes to travel, we all know that feeling of wanting to escape to our happy place, whether it's hitting the beach, the ski slopes, or just kicking it with your crew in a tropical paradise. And Priceline wants you to get there and be very happy with a happy price. So you never have to miss a trip. Let me tell you, Priceline has got your back to make it all happen. My happy place is Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. Picture this: crystal clear waters, golden sands, and sun shining down on you like it's your personal spotlight. That's right. Cabo is my ultimate happy place. And you know what makes it even better? Priceline's VIP family feature. You heard it from me. That's right. VIP treatment for you and your squad. Imagine being with your crew, soaking up the sun and living your best life. And while scoring deals up to 5 times faster, it's like scoring a game-winning touchdown on vacation. Now, who am I taking with me to Cabo? To that epic trip, that adventure? My boys, my ride or dies, my crew, ones who've been there through thick and thin from the beginning to the end. I'm not taking any kids, no kids, just me and the boys living it up. So what are you waiting for? Download the Priceline app today and save up to 60% off select hotels and go to your favorite happy price with Priceline. Make some memories that'll last a lifetime. Cabo ain't ready for me or us, but we're ready for Cabo. Thanks to Priceline, the real MVP of travel.
Rachel Nichols joins us now to talk about a league she knows so well, the NBA. Good morning to you.
Good
and
morning.
Welcome back. So, the Houston Rockets won again. That's 12 out of 13. Last night, they won a wild one in overtime at Oklahoma City, which did not have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and whose Chet Holmgren fouled out with about 8 minutes left in the game, which was a shocker. But Jalen Green had 37 points and 10 rebounds and 7 assists. And since Alpi Shengun went down, Jalen Green has averaged 32 points a game. That's in 8 games. So, Keyshawn, why don't you start us off here? Are we seeing the emergence of a star or even a superstar in Houston?
I mean, superstar is a bit of a stretch, but you're certainly seeing a young player who's kind of coming into his own. And Ime obviously understands with Shengun out that he's the next man up, the next guy that can give them what they're looking for. And you said the 32. Well, in the last 14 games, it's 29. 28.9, I'm going to round it up. I mean, that is star status. Now, could he have done that all season long if Shengun wasn't in? I don't know. But he certainly is coming into his own. I mean, this is a young team with a couple veteran players on it that they brought in to Van Fleet, Brooks, to kind of teach them.
Jeff Green.
Yeah. To kind of teach them how to play basketball a certain way.
Yep.
And it's working. I mean, they got Golden State looking over their shoulder right now. Big
time. Better be. Yep.
I mean, look, could he have done this with Shengun in? No. No, he could not have because of the spacing that is created on the floor with Shengun out. And that is really the key for this team. It's awesome what's happening now. It's great for these guys' confidence. Jalen Green has been a streaky, inconsistent player. Just to see him have those reps, have those great nights out night after night, that's going to be phenomenal. If they can catch the Warriors and get in that play-in game, that will be ahead of schedule for them and give this young team going into next season something to really stand on. All that being said, they have got to figure out a way to have this greatness that they're seeing right now exist alongside the greatness that they saw from Shengun earlier this season.
Hey.
Because a lot of it's just physical room, right? Jalen Green has more room.
He does.
To get around the basket,
but Rachel,
do athletic things.
It was only a couple of weeks back. I sat watching Şengün destroy Wembanyama. He destroyed him. He went for 45 on Wemby, and a bunch of them were right in Wemby's face because he's saying, I'm just going at the shot blocker. I'm going right up into his chest and threw him. And now you're suggesting they're a little better with Jalen Green being able to be Jalen Green. Okay, so where does that leave them when their star center comes back? Because he's got a bad ankle, but I assume he's going
to
come back.
You just make the adjustment.
And well, I think that's a big adjustment.
But I think he's smart enough as a coach to be able to make the adjustments. Like Rachel said, maybe Jalen Green doesn't average 29 points. Maybe he starts, when he comes back, it's 23, you know, because Şengün's back in the lineup. But this isn't really about, it's not about this year. It's about next year. This is just a building block for them to be able to now look and say, okay, we can do it. Mm-hmm. We know we could do it. And then there's a piece or two out there that they can go get next year to add to what they've already done. This ain't, because they're not going nowhere. This is a 10th spot. They're not going nowhere. Not this year.
I do have a lot of faith in Ime and what he can do here, X and O's wise, at these guys go forward. And the culture change, too. We just can't forget what a big deal this is. Remember, I mean, it was not that long ago. It was a year and a half, a couple years ago. even beyond that, right? After he left and the feeling of, like, man, this team is hopeless and it's purgatory if you get set down there and they don't know what they're doing and they don't know where going. And all of a sudden, especially with Ime coming in, because he is such a tone setter for the organization, they have become a young, scrappy team. Fred VanVleet chose to go there. They have a team that feels like they want to be and play in the locker room for each other. So the idea that this group now goes into next season, as you said, whether it's with a play-in behind them or not, that they go in thinking, we are a team where people want to be and you are going to be scared when we come out on the floor, that was a laughable sentence just two seasons ago.
Yeah.
So even approaching that right now is huge.
All right. So back to Jalen Green. You guys obviously weren't on the show back when, but before his draft, we went back and forth and back and forth for a month about Jalen Green or Cade Cunningham. And I was all about Jalen Green because he's so much more offensively explosive than Cade can be. Cade's a more all-around better, maybe basketball player. Although last night when Oklahoma City started to double Jalen Green in the second half, and especially in overtime, he had to give up the ball. He can pass the basketball. He has some feel for the game that I didn't know he had when I watched G League Ignite back in the day. So the point is, he is a wildly explosive scorer. And he just off, I start to compare him because it's the only thing I have. It's to Ant-Man. So we have Anthony Edwards and Jalen Green. He's a little more offensively skilled to me at this point than Anthony is. Just naturally offensive skilled. But Anthony is so much bigger and stronger because Jalen Green plays like he's 6'7", because you don't talk about jump out of the gym. Obviously, right. So can Anthony. But they only list Jalen Green at 6'4". I thought he was 6'7". I looked it up, and he's 6'4". He weighs like 185. He does not have his man body quite yet. Mm-hmm. Anthony Edwards weighs 225, so that's like plus 40 pounds. So he's playing with a lot more force than Jalen is able to. But listen, Jalen can just flat out skywalk. And over these eight games without Şengün, he's making 48% of his threes. Is that going to hold? Is that going to be a constant going forward? Well, he's highly capable because he's got natural, easy stroke with it. So I think we're looking at a star for sure here.
When you get into a rhythm and you're shooting threes, he's able to do that now. That wasn't necessarily the case.
It was not the case.
It wasn't the case before.
He would hesitate.
So if he needs...
Well, the offense was going through Şengün every
time.
If
he needs to revert back to that, at least he knows and they know he's capable of shooting deep if he needs to. So I wouldn't worry about it reverting back to what they did with Şengün because, again, I think Ime knows, hey, I got something special here.
Well, look, here's what I would say about Jalen Green. What he's shown us so far is his trajectory is not just like this, right? It's going to be... this. And what you hope is that it eventually trends upward. I would not expect, I hope that he's this hot through the rest of the season because it's a great story and it's great for his confidence and he's a fun player to watch. If it doesn't, if toward the end of the season it starts to peter off, I'm not going to be shocked. Yeah. If next season he's sort of a little bit more like this again, I'm not going to be shocked either. I don't think this is, oh my gosh, Jalen Green has made this amazing step forward. He'll never go back. I think he is showing himself and the rest of us what he is capable of, and I would expect more of that in the future, just maybe not every game from here on out for okay. the rest of time.
So, to me, the real star of this show is the coach,
yes.
and you know the coach. And I have carefully watched this coach since he sat at the right hand of God the Father Almighty for all those years in San Antonio. And look at him now. He is such a commanding officer. He looks the part. He acts the part. And he has changed everything about the way they play basketball. He's a guy I would love to play for. And are you with me, Rachel?
Yes.
Feedback on what you've seen from Ime in charge.
100%. Look, we saw in Boston, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what he did in Boston, and not just what he accomplished in terms of the guys on the court, but the way the guys acted toward him in the locker room, off the court, in the hallway. You could tell the respect they had for him.
Yes.
It was obviously controversial when he left. To Ime's credit, he definitely has talked about, hey, learning from his experiences, just like everybody else, and that he is becoming a pillar in that organization in Houston in the way that they hoped that he would be. And again, the players have so much respect for him. And you know, Skip, that in this league, with this level of talent, those guys have to believe. And he's given them a place to go, a belief. And it is a great example of, with a team that is not all young, right?
Yeah.
But some young, to a degree young, to have a disciplined first coach, which he is, a defensively oriented coach, which he can be, and somebody who says, great, here is some clarity. Here is what you are supposed to do. Here is where you are supposed to be. And here's the guy who's going to be there for you in return. That is one of his strengths. And we have seen that on the court pay out.
It all boils down to the respect level. I was going to say that, Rachel, they respect him. And the fact that they respect him, they do for him. And they do the right things. He puts them in the right situation. They trust him. When you look at the great coaches in professional sports, people trust them. All of them across the board. Even if you went down to Miami, they trust them. Right? You look at Ty Lue, they trust him.
Mm-hmm.
They just trust what they're saying, what they're giving him, and you're looking at it with Ime right now, right in front of us.
Hey, there's also a little bit of good fear factor. Like, you know he's in charge. He's going to have the final say because he's 6'6 and carries himself. He's not that far removed from being a player, and they know that. They see that.
And they saw the season in Boston, too. They know. They know what he could do. Now, I will say, Houston does have the 10th strongest strength of schedule going forward.
Tough.
So it is going to be a little bit rough for them. I mean, there's not that much season left.
10 games?
Yeah, 10th hardest strength of schedule.
So you got 10 games
nine,
left, 10 probably.
Games,
right? 9, 10 games.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Hey,
They're a game out.
But I will say it'll be interesting to see what happens if they make that play-in. Again, I think the confidence and the experience, we always say, particularly in a playoff environment, you don't know what it's like until you've been in it. So that will give them a little bit of at least a taste of it. I would say to you, I think Jalen Green has a ways to go before he hits Anthony Edwards' level. They're both 22 years old.
They're both 22.
And Anthony is just such a dynamic player and has that confidence that Jalen is still developing.
Listen,
but there's no question that Green has been a revelation here in this last tick of the season.
Because he had Lue Dort in his face last night, and he was doing work on him. He is something to behold. They are fun to watch.
So fun.
And I think they're dangerous, man. If they slip into the 10, I don't know if they can catch Golden State. Golden State's starting to play like Steph's starting to say, no, not on my watch. But
one game, Skip, three games.
It's one game. I got it. And Golden State has been so bad at home. They're a sub-500 team at home.
And so, I think they see each other in a couple weeks.
They see each other. I don't know how dangerous, even if the Rockets get in, I don't know how dangerous they're going to be once they get there. But again, every step forward isn't a big step. And I don't know, I feel like the NFL, you do see teams come out of nowhere a little bit more often because personnel changes so much in the NFL. But the NBA, it is very unusual to see a team succeed, win an NBA Finals, per se, you know, without having gotten there and been in the conference finals first or not into the conference finals until getting into the playoffs. Well, Houston's much further back than that.
Yeah.
They're not anywhere near that territory. But the same thing applies, right? Is that, hey, until you get into a playoff environment, you don't know what it's like.
Yeah,
so
but
for them
about
to get into
football,
it would be huge.
Three games to get to the Super Bowl. And basketball to win a championship.
No, it's hard. Yes. It's a long
You got to have done it more.
All right, but we keep dismissing Oklahoma City because we say, well, they haven't been there and done any of that before. But the one thing about Houston is Van Vliet knows what that feels like. Yeah. And Dillon Brooks has been in high-stress playoff situations, even though he didn't really stand up for himself against LeBron after he called him out. But last night at Oklahoma City, and again, there's no Shai Gilgeous, but Dillon Brooks in overtime stepped up and made two huge threes. So Dillon the villain, he's found a place where he's happy. He looks much happier. His body language is much better with Ime.
Well, he, by the way, was undervalued because of some of the off-court stuff, of some of the chattering, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when he was available, Houston was able to get him for less than probably they should have for the caliber player that he is because of all the other stuff. And if they can keep that stuff in line, and again, that's where Ime Udoka comes in, right? Mm-hmm. You only talk like that if you feel like it's going to fly in the locker room and with your head coach. And I think Ime has made it clear what is and isn't going to fly.
If you think about it, Skip, the other 9-10 teams ahead of them, perennial all-stars on their roster.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
It's
so it's
loaded.
Just going to be hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about everybody from the top all the way down, perennial all-stars on those teams.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Let's just say, for sake of argument, that the Lakers wind up 9-10, so it's a home game for the Lakers, and they have to host the Rockets. I would not
be real comfortable with that. They beat us a couple times this year.
Yeah. They're not afraid.
I'm taking LeBron in that scenario. Yeah. At home in a playing game, I'm going.
I got that.
We're trying to get out of the play-in, though.
The Lakers did something last night they've rarely done all season. They took care of business. They actually did what they were supposed to do and should have done, even without Anthony Davis. They won easily at Memphis. LeBron had a 14-rebound triple-double. Rui Hachimura hit 7 of 8 threes. The Lakers made 18 of 33 threes. That's 54%. That'll win a lot of games. Lakers validated their huge win without LeBron the night before at Milwaukee and now have a shot at going 6-0 on this road trip with upcoming games at Indiana, at Toronto, and at Washington. So, Rachel, you haven't loved this team's chances of going deep in the playoffs. Now what shot would you give the Lakers of actually winning it all?
Look, I have said the whole time, this is a matchup-based team, right? So if they match up in the first round against a smaller team like the Clippers or the Thunder, I think they're going to win. If they match up in the first round against the Denver Nuggets, I am on record saying I think that the Lakers will lose. So you could see the Lakers, again, we just talked about in the last segment, they play the Warriors in the play-in in the that week. Maybe they lose a one-off game to Steph Curry. They're going to make it into the playoffs. On the other hand, I can see that exact same team making it to the Western Conference Finals and even giving Denver more of a push than they did last year.
Yep.
I still don't see them making it past the Nuggets unless something fluky or an injury happens. I just think the Nuggets, position for position, are a better team. But the Lakers are showing you that when they came into this season and we all thought they're a top third team in the league, and then they played like a bottom third team in the league, frankly, for a big chunk of the season, they are showing us again they are a top third team in the league. They are top third team in the West, as far as I'm concerned. They're just not number one. And to be in the finals, you've got to be number one in your conference.
Yeah, see, I look at it a little bit different. It's not because I'm a Laker fan. I can't count out the Freight Train 23.
Yeah.
I can't bet against understanding, because when you go back and you look at LeBron's career, for whatever weird reason, when he gets into the playoffs, he winds up in a sweet spot. It's been that way. Guys rise to the occasion and plays with them. And on top of that, Skip mentioned 6-0. Well, let's say they go 5-1. Mm-hmm. Those teams that's above them, they're going to start looking down because they right up on the back end of those teams. Mm-hmm. All those teams got to do is lose one or two games, and the Lakers come home against Cleveland and those guys. Mm-hmm. They win a couple of those games. Now you're not sitting in the 9th spot. You're now in the 7th spot. And potentially, I don't think they'll catch the Mavs in the 6th spot. Is it the Mavs? I don't think they'll catch the Mavs in the 6th, but what if they do? Mm-hmm. Even though the Mavs are red hot right now and they won 5 straight, but what if the Mavs get on like this 3-game losing skid all of a sudden? I got my money on the Lakers playing against the Denver Nuggets. And if they don't draw Denver early, but in the Western Conference, but if they draw them early, I still believe that the Lakers can go up against them. They learned from their mistakes a year ago. Mm-hmm. LeBron's already been on the record saying he needs to cut back his minutes. Yeah. If you look at the series last year, as you know, Rachel and Skip.
He was tired.
He was tired. That dude had my legs out there playing, you know, and he's in shape.
I thought he spent $2 million a year on his body.
I knew he was
Where did that come from?
Stop,
whatever happened to that? I don't know.
Okay, that $2 million is reported, but let's stop that,
all right.
Please.
Look, obviously, he still has to get through a playoffs.
Yeah.
And the defense that you need to play in the playoffs, and that's where, frankly, we saw him get tired at the end of fourth quarters as they went deeper into the postseason run last year. They cannot depend on him alone. The idea that the Lakers have gotten these contributions from other parts of the court over these last two games against Milwaukee, against Memphis, tells me that the confidence level of the other guys in each other and from LeBron or AD to them has been a big deal. LeBron James is on the bench for a game. Anthony Davis is on a bench for a game. And they're sitting and watching these guys that in the future they have to pass to, that they have to rely on. They're watching them get it done without them. That matters. It has an impact not just on the confidence of the role players, but the confidence the stars have in them. Mm. So these kinds of wins to me are actually super important when we talk about how far the Lakers can get in the postseason, because these are the kinds of building blocks beyond just, man, LeBron James, he's pretty good. Anthony Davis, he's pretty good. You need more than that to advance in the playoffs, and they're getting more than that now. They're building on more than that. Mm. That is huge. Again, I don't know, even if you are a top third team in the West, that means you are the best team in the West, and to me, they are not yet the best team in the West.
So, timeout. Did I just hear one or both of you plant the tired excuse for LeBron once again? So it's set up for him to be tired again.
No, it's not, because a year ago, Skip, he didn't say he was going to cut back on his minutes. He never said that.
Okay,
he's telling you, I may have to cut back on my minutes now because he sees exactly where it is.
That sounds like maybe the excuse is replanted, because he has now averaged the fifth most minutes in the NBA so far, 35 minutes a game,
and it has him sitting in a ninth spot.
Yeah.
So if you pull back. And you take what Paul Pierce said, by him pulling back,
he's not talking about pulling back minutes, just pulling back on usage.
Yeah,
you know,
but if I'm pulling back on minutes, I'm pulling back on usage, which means that I'm letting the other people get an opportunity to go out there and do their deal, because I'm over here chilling.
But they need to do their deal with you.
Yeah.
With you.
But they can do both. Skip, they can do both.
All right. So what did I see at Milwaukee? I saw Anthony Davis terrorize Giannis. He outplayed Giannis. He just did. It was a sight to behold, because when Anthony Davis does that, well, as Paul Pierce said yesterday, he looked like the best player in the NBA, but he is a top five player on occasion when he gets that button pushed.
Yes.
Okay. He's capable.
Yeah, 23 boards.
Yeah, it's like nuclear capability on any given night, but there are those nights. But I'm just saying, that happened. Rui, last night, he was sensational. He is an NBA player. He's somebody you want on your squad because he's physical. He's got an NBA body. He's got a nice stroke. He's not afraid of anybody. He played big against the Nuggets last year. That's a championship type of piece that you have. And I know you're not the biggest fan of Austin Reeves. I can just tell he can play, and he ain't afraid of nobody. And he wasn't afraid of the Denver Nuggets last year, because when he got to shoot the ball in those four fourth quarters, he made 7 of 8 shots against the Nuggets in all those close fourth quarter games. Every time they called on him, he got that. So I'm saying it's all there. And then D'Angelo. He's just a gifted offensive scorer. And you say, well, don't give me just 3 points tomorrow night. I need to see this on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
Well,
Why do I want three after you score 44?
After 44. But he is highly capable. To me, if I'm LeBron, I look at the pieces I have. If Jared Vanderbilt could come back, and you've made a great point about how do you get him back in the rotation, but at least Jared Vanderbilt can play defense, and you don't have to blend to play defense. You can just use him as a stopper type for 15 or 18 minutes a night. Yep. If he can do that, and I think that's still got possibilities, then that would work. He would help make you 9 deep. They go about 8 deep now. Well, then, and obviously rotation shortened in the postseason, but they have LeBron has to look at this team and say, you know what? I got a shot. I got a shot here.
I don't think he's looking at it that way.
I absolutely think that he thinks he has a shot. I think he looks around this locker room. Now, look, the week before the trade deadline, would he have liked a few more people in this locker room? Yes. I know how I know, because of all of the Knicks gear he was basically wearing that week with the tweeting and the statue and the other. Yeah. That being said, what he is good at is that once that trade deadline passes, he looks around the room and he says, all right, this is what I got. This is where we're going. And he clearly did that again this season. He has faith in these guys. He's been talking up these guys. It does feel like a complete, thorough, well-functioning unit, to your point. You were talking during the break about, oh, how deep are they going? How deep are they playing? They've got enough, right? They're playing these guys enough. LeBron, as you said, is able to play a little bit less here and there, and that's a big deal. Again, though, are you willing to say, Skip, that is the best constructed roster in the conference? I don't think you can.
Yeah, I saw them play Denver close. I like the way they match up with Denver until the last 3 minutes of the game. And then Joker and Jamal did not play last night. Mm-hmm. Phoenix, we're going to talk about them in just a moment. But when those two are right, they just say, we know how to do this. Yeah. They can close like nobody can close. So that's the edge. But it's not the weird edge when you talk about matchups. The one I'd fear for the Lakers is Sacramento. I don't know why they can't play against Sacramento. De'Aaron's just too quick. They don't have anybody who can stay in front of him.
In a seven-game series.
You would think they could track him down. But
seven-game series might be.
But listen, I don't. If you're asking me to pick the Lakers over Denver, I'm feeling okay about it because I don't think they're afraid of Denver.
It's not like a mismatch. As long as Anthony Davis played the way he played the other night, then yeah. But if all of a sudden he don't play that, at least cancel Joker out. At least cancel him out.
Well, he did last year. He did okay.
If he can cancel him out.
I don't think you're getting Anthony Davis playing the way he did the other night, every game of a seven-game series, but I don't think you're getting him disappearing every game of a seven-game series either. The Anthony Davis experience is that he's incredibly, outrageously talented, and even all told, with the effort stuff, with the mental stuff, with the highs, with the lows, he is one of the best players of his generation.
That being said,
he can be all of those things and not truly one of the greatest mentally, players of all time. He's not that. He's not someone who's going to apply that mental effort in the same way every single game the way the Michaels
did. But he did impress me at Milwaukee. He did something to his knee. Now they're calling it hyperextender. I thought he banged knees with Beasley, but whatever. Mm-hmm. It was bothering him, and they were treating it on the bench. He sucked it up and played his career-high minutes. So he's showing Keyshawn that he's learned how to play through that, because that's almost like a mental thing. You know that from football. Sometimes are you really injured or are you just kind of hurt? You know, like, can you just figure it out? Can you just will it away?
We look at Anthony Davis, right? And he falls to the ground. The first thing we say is, oh, here we go again. It's actually been a while since he was significantly hurt. He's played.
You looked this up the other day.
Yeah, yesterday. He played. He's only missed four games, I think, this year.
Of the last 100 games?
Yeah, something like that.
He's got 96 out of the last 100.
The tag on him is not fair.
No, but that's the way people,
They just look at
him, and he's got a nickname, Street Clothes, and this, that, and the other. It's just, yeah, he's been hurt in the past, right when you thought the Lakers are going to take off, then all of a sudden it's a groin, or it's a this, or that. Mm-hmm. Or he gets hit in the mouth, and he's got to go off. And it's like
poked in the eye
and he's going off, you know, so everybody jumps to that. It's like, we're paying this dude $60 million a year. It's unfair.
Yeah.
It's unfair. But I was thinking about what you said about the roster.
Mm-hmm.
They probably do got the best roster
in the
conference. Maybe outside, Denver may have a little bit of a better roster. Just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Their roster's better than Phoenix, certainly better than Golden State, better than Minnesota, better than OKC, better than Dallas, because I'm looking at Kyrie and Luka, and then outside that you got a couple guys. Who else?
I mean, look, it's going to be interesting to see what happens if they meet up with Minnesota in the playoffs and when, right? Because we don't know what's going to happen with Karl-Anthony Towns.
No.
And you have a team in Minnesota who doesn't have the experience all the way around that the Lakers have, because obviously that team won a title not that long ago. However, They have a player in Anthony Edwards, who is electricity itself. They have Defensive Player of the Year in Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns, who is having a career sort of year and experience and approach to the game. So I am, and they also match up with the Lakers
lengthwise.
And so I am very interested to see when we talk about how far the Lakers can go and what that roster is made up of. That Minnesota roster is pretty interesting.
All right.
So if they're healthy, and they're not right now.
Now to the biggest Laker X factor. And you have been around this team a lot. It's the head coach, because he has been under fire. There have been many reports about the locker room is out and this and that. What's your gut feeling on his position within the locker room?
I certainly think they're riding with Darvin Ham. I mean, I wasn't worried, frankly, in the middle of the season. We sat here and talked when they were really struggling, and I said to you, I said, they're not firing Darvin Ham right now.
No, just not, we weren't going to fire
him. It's not the way the organization works, and it's there wasn't that level of animosity. I have been around LeBron James teams when he did not like the coach. We saw what happened to David Blatt. Right? So we didn't get to that here. And we'll see what happens. But there was a lot of other issues besides Darvin Ham. And I think everyone inside the locker room knew that as well. It was a little bit a matter of finding the roster combination that worked. Health, obviously, was a huge factor in all of that. Darvin was getting tagged a little bit for, like, why can't you keep the same lineup in? Well, the same guys aren't available every night.
Yeah.
However, I think that it's fair to say it's been a learning process for him, too. And we'll have to see in the playoffs whether who that coach is matters a little bit, because it always matters some, versus more if it was a team without LeBron James. I mean, you've got LeBron on the floor, so there's always a variance.
My eyebrows raise up, though, Rachel. My eyebrows raise up when you have a star player questioning what you're doing.
When
Anthony Davis says, well, we're in the wrong position on defense, that makes you go, well, only person putting you in the wrong spot is the coach.
Yes.
So Anthony Davis saying something different.
No. I think you were 100% right on what Anthony was saying. But again, I think except for the top five, top seven coaches in the league, you're getting that feeling among the players some of the time.
Why would you leave LeBron James in a game you win it by 27 points with 5 minutes to go?
That was my question.
But it should be.
I'm asking you a question.
It should be timeout. Come over here, man. Sit with me. I need you in the long haul.
Are you having the conversation with him?
With Darvin or LeBron?
With LeBron.
Yeah, I would 100%.
Uh-huh.
Time out, man. Mm-hmm. Come over here. Mm-hmm. We need you next game. We don't need you. This game's over.
Yes. Look,
Don't be intimidated.
I am the gullible person who believed them at the beginning of the season when they said we're going to keep his minutes down a little bit.
But what's the point of
only
playing late
in
the game?
Only because it was such a smart thing to do, and then they didn't even do that.
What's the point of playing late in the game?
Well, look, in a league where teams have coughed up 19, 20, 25, 30-point leads in just 10 minutes in the last month or two,
that's
I understand
true.
A little
it was
bit
five
more
minutes,
about
though.
Why they did.
It was actually less than five, right,
yes.
Skip?
No. Okay, the flashpoint for you was there's 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and he makes a reverse layup. Now you're up 27 on the Grizzlies at Memphis.
I don't disagree.
Okay, and at that point, you think, that's enough. And then he stays in the game all the way down to the five-minute mark of the fourth quarter, and he makes a free throw that puts him up 17.
Yeah, 17.
And he stays in for two more minutes.
Time out. Okay.
And to Keyshawn's point, LeBron loves to play basketball. He just, I think he was having fun out there, and so he just wanted to stay out there.
You know, I'm the night before.
But you know I'm a big what-if guy.
Yeah.
What if?
What if?
You know, that's all I'm saying. All right. Now you talk about...
So now do you want everyone to sit all the time?
No, 5 minutes ago in a game, I'm up by 17.
I'm just saying.
If I lose by 17 4 minutes ago... We need to lose.
No, I agree. I would have pulled him also. I just don't think it's an indictment on Darvin Ham's whole... 10 years a coach, they left LeBron in the game for a few extra.
Man, get LeBron out the game, get Anthony Davis out the game, get him out, empty the bench.